Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 659, Heating It Up for Obama. This has been recorded on January 4th of the year 2009. As I said at the beginning of side one, please use the website because there's so much there, including now the entire, all of the archive shows. Using that website will be essential for understanding programs like this. We're going to plunge right in and we're going to take a look at the virtual state and the Earth Island, and we're going to take a look, and we're going to resume where we left off in side one with some of the fallout from the Mumbai massacre. Now, one of the things that I spoke about in For the Record 657, targeting the centers of finance, was that one expected element of fallout from the Mumbai massacre, obviously with Lashkar-e-Taiba, Pakistani Muslim Brotherhood affiliate, having perpetrated the assault, that did not exactly set people in India to doing the rag. On the contrary, they are putting together, the Indian intelligence services are putting together information about the obvious Pakistani participation in that particular incident, including live, real-time control by some of the Pakistani controllers of the attackers as the assault was going on. One of the things that I spoke about in 657 was that in the event of heightened Indian-Pakistani tensions, which is certainly one of the elements of fallout from the Mumbai massacre, it figured that Pakistan might very well begin drawing down troops from the frontier with Afghanistan, where they're being used to contain some of the militants in the tribal area, in order to deploy them along the border with India, and that this would benefit the Taliban and the Muslim Brotherhood combatants in that particular part of the Earth Island. And of course, the worldwide broadcast sentiment coming out of the Middle East is going to further inflame Islamic sentiment and also, in all probability, aid recruiting efforts for the Taliban and like-minded groups. The following is from Yahoo News. This is an AP story by Nahal Tusi. It's datelined Islamabad, Pakistan. Its headline, Scenic Pakistani Valley Falls to Taliban Militants. It reads in part, Taliban militants are beheading and burning their way through Pakistan's picturesque Swat Valley, and residents say the insurgents now control most of the mountainous region far from the lawless tribal areas where jihadists thrive. The deteriorating situation in the former tourist haven comes despite an army offensive that began in 2007 and an attempted peace deal. It is especially worrisome to Pakistani officials because the valley lies outside the areas where Al-Qaeda and Taliban militants have traditionally operated and where the military is staging a separate offensive. You can't imagine how bad it is, says Muzaffar al-Malik, a federal lawmaker whose home in Swat was attacked by bomb-toting assailants in mid-December, weeks after he left. It's worse day by day, unquote. The Taliban activity in northwest Pakistan also comes as the country shifts forces east to the Indian border because of tensions over last month's terrorist attacks in Mumbai, potentially giving insurgents more space to maneuver along the Afghan frontier. So in addition to a collapsing global and U.S. economy, in addition to all-out bedlam in the Middle East, the other part of the Earth Island, or swinging farther toward the Bay of Bengal and towards the Pacific Ocean, things are heating up there too in manner that I pretty much predicted it would. And by the way, I should... It's not to be egotistical. A lot of strategic analysts said that in the event of heightened India-Pakistani tensions, the Pakistanis might draw down troops, thereby aiding the Taliban. And that is exactly what happened. And you can bet that's exactly one of the things that the Mumbai attacks were designed to do. Again, reference For the Record 657. Now, while the foreign policy burner has been heating up, the Middle East and India-Pakistani foreign policy burners getting heated up for Obama, something that has received almost no attention in the United States is the fact that there appears to be the Bush administration and related elements, and again, I believe that the Bush administration is a direct extension of the underground Reich, as is Hamas, as is the Muslim Brotherhood, as is Lashkar-e-Taiba, as is Prince al-Walid, as is Karl Rove, whom I believe is the point element for the underground Reich in this administration. Something is happening, folks, and it's happening in Georgia. Yeah, Georgia, not Georgia, U.S., Georgia in the in the middle of the Earth Island, part of what used to be the Soviet Union. And we're going to go marching through Georgia right now. The following is from the Wired blog network. It's called Danger Room. It's called Five for Fighting, a closer look at the Pentagon's Minerva-ish initiative. U.S. and Georgia to sign strategic pact. It's by Nathan Hodge. Had you heard about this, folks? It's dated December 26th of 2008. Merry Christmas, world. More trouble on the Earth Island. It reads, months after Georgia fought a short, nasty war with its northern neighbor, the United States is moving to shore up security ties with the former Soviet Republic. Agence France-Presse reports that Georgian officials will sign a, quote, strategic partnership, unquote, treaty on January 4th in Washington. On Tuesday, the Department of State issued the first confirmation that the United States and Georgia would pursue a more formal security arrangement. In response to questions from reporters, State issued the following news release. As President Saakashvili noted to the press on December 22nd, the United States and Georgia are discussing the text of a new bilateral charter that will outline our enhanced cooperation to help Georgia advance security, democratic, and market economic reforms to strengthen Georgia, bolster our partnership, and deepen Georgia's Euro-Atlantic integration. This charter is similar to the one signed by the United States and the Ukraine on December 19th in Washington. Note the Ukraine. We're coming back to that in a second as well. This item has largely gone unreported in the U.S. media, but it comes as both Moscow and Tbilisi continue their post-war rhetoric. In a year-end interview with some rather obsequious Russian television reporters, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev took a shot at Saakashvili. We had the impression that our neighbor was not quite right in the head, but we did not imagine it was to this degree, he said. Saakashvili said Medvedev's comments were an acknowledgement of their Russian aggression, unquote. As discussed in For the Record program number 656, the play in the United States on the Russian-Georgian war of the summer of 2008 was hysterical in a way that much of the accepted information about the conflict in the Middle East is hysterical at this present time. We were told here in the United States that this was just, you know, this was the Russian bear doing what they do and blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah. One of the things that received attention from some people was the fact that the number one lobbyist for the Georgian government was also one of the key foreign policy advisors for John McCain. And, of course, Sarah Palin, among others, weighed in that we had to prepare to fight Russia over this, blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah. And, of course, it was represented here in the United States by the Amen Chorus, Fox News et al. More about Fox News later in the broadcast. That this was, of course, you know, again, the Russians doing what they do, blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah. What actually happened was this. Georgia launched a surprise artillery barrage on a sleeping village at night and killed 2,000 people. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a war crime. What the Russians did, again, separating out all of the, you know, well, here they go again, the Russians, you know, the tanks are rolling, blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah. What actually the Russians did was they basically destroyed the Georgian military bases from which the attacks were launched. They did a very thorough job of destroying those military bases and then pretty much withdrew. This was not some recrudescence of the evil empire, as Ronald Reagan termed it. But do note that now, while Obama is preparing to come into office, Bush is basically icing U.S.-Soviet relations for Obama. It remains to be seen what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton does in this context. One of Obama's top foreign policy advisors was Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's part of the old Galen contingent, as talked about, by the way, in AFA program number 3. So that's not very encouraging, but note that as Obama is preparing to take office, note how things are being heated up, and note that we are going to sign a security arrangement with Georgia, which is just what we shouldn't be doing. And note also that this is similar to something we did with the Ukraine. And by the way, the Ukraine is in the news, basically, to make a very long story very short. Even after the Cold War ended and after the Soviet Union dissolved, the United States basically pursuing a geopolitical tack that was pure Nazi in its origins and intent, and really pre-Nazi in the sense that it's something of a manifestation of the old great game trying to contain Russia, we have basically continued to pimp-slap Russia around, a weakened Russia, and we have continued to walk NATO literally right up to Russia's borders. And we have been doing so in collaboration with some of the old Nazi elements. And this is not exactly sitting real well in Russia. And again, I'm sorry, this will not sit better with some members of the audience than some of my comments on side one about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But Russia's cause in this particular instance is just, and the cause of the Georgians and the Ukrainians is not. San Francisco Chronicle from today, January 4th of 2009, touches on some of the fallout from this policy of basically continuing to mess with Russia, even after communism fell, after Russia became kind of the ultimate free market state, although albeit a rather corrupt one. By the way, again, the AFA programs, AFA Program 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union, and AFA 37, the massive, how the United States lost the Second World War. They're available for download for free, folks. The only investment on your part is one of time. Please access them. Today's Chronicle, January 4th of 2009, has an LA Times story by Megan K. Stack, headlined, Russia-Ukraine gas fight ripples westward. It reads in part, fuel delivery to four European countries fell below normal Saturday as Russia's state gas monopoly withheld natural gas from neighboring Ukraine for the third consecutive day. By the way, the rationale was that Ukraine is siphoning off some of the gas that is intended for Western Europe, but it is against the background of this continued bullying of Russia by the United States. And by the way, that is going to have some very interesting fallout vis-a-vis the Middle East, because as we continue to try to mess with Russia, and there are indications that just as we fought a very real war, just as American soldiers and Allied soldiers fought a very real war against the combatants of fascism in World War II, elements of the power elite and the economic elite were also colluding with those very same elements, even while American soldiers are in a very real war against elements of the fascist Muslim Brotherhood in places like Afghanistan. So, too, elements of our power elite and our intelligence system have backed Muslim Brotherhood combatants in Chechnya. The heirs, by the way, to the Waffengruppe SS Krim, who fought with the SS on the side of the Nazis in that area in World War II. Skipping down. On Saturday, Gazprom accused Ukraine of siphoning off 35 million cubic meters of gas a day bound for Europe. It's not us but Ukraine that uses blackmail toward Russia and Europe, unquote, the vice chairman of Gazprom's board of directors, Alexander Medvedev, told reporters in the Czech Republic, Interfax reported yesterday. Ukraine's pro-Western president has enraged Russia by pushing for NATO membership for the former Soviet state. Well, Ukraine's pro-Western president is Mr. Yushchenko, as noted in a number of different programs, including the description for the record 647, as well as number 529. His wife is the former Ekaterina Chumachenko, who was in charge of presidential liaison under Ronald Reagan, and who also was the point element for the Ukrainian fascist element that was brought into the United States at the end of World War II. We've spoken about that in AFA programs 1, 2, 3, 36, 37, and the aforementioned For the Record shows. Notice now, bearing in mind not only the Earth Island, but the virtual state of the underground Reich, we're going to take a look at this quote for this pro-Western president. Well, he's that, but he's a whole lot more. He's married to the point element, the former Ekaterina Chumachenko, for the OUNB in the United States. And indeed, Viktor Yushchenko is very close to the OUNB's successors in the Ukraine. From the Transatlantic Intelligencer of December 2nd of 2004, we read, skipping down, Thursday, December 2nd, Europe's Ukraine won. Viktor Yushchenko, Democrat and anti-Semite. A report by the British Helsinki Human Rights Group reports that Viktor Yushchenko, the supposedly pro-Western Democratic candidate for the Ukrainian presidency, defended a large circulation Ukrainian paper that in 2003 published a bizarre anti-Semitic tract claiming, among other things, that some 400,000 Jews participated in the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941. The paper's editor, Vasily Gruzin, is quoted as saying via the Jewish Telegraph Agency, in defense of his decision to publish the tract, quote, "I personally have nothing against common Jews, but rather against a small group of Jewish oligarchs who control the Ukraine both economically and politically. I believe the point of Zionism today is Jewish control of the world, and we see this process at work in the Ukraine today," unquote. Sounds rather like Hamas is chartered, does it not? Again, the virtual state. Continuing, the paper Silki Visti, which supports the Ukrainian, quote, opposition, unquote, of Viktor Yushchenko, was ordered closed by the Ukrainian court in January of 2004 following charges brought by the Jewish anti-fascist community that it was inciting ethnic hatred. An English-language website on Ukrainian affairs reproduces a press release dated January 29th of 2004 from the website of Viktor Yushchenko's Our Ukraine Party, in which Yushchenko responds to the court decision as follows, quote, "The government will get more and more upset with the truthful information in mass media the closer we get to elections, and it will not be surprising to see increased pressure at other oppositional publications," unquote. That was Yushchenko's response to the closing of that newspaper that came on with that Nazi-style anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. Continuing with this, the BHHRG report titled Shadow of Anti-Semitism Over Ukraine's Disputed Election also points to links between Yushchenko and the Ukrainian nationalist leader Andriy Shkil, who is quoted favorably by citing Nazi ideologist Walter Duray's ideas on eugenics, as well as Mein Kampf. And skipping down. On Yushchenko's support for Shkil, GermanForeignPolicy.com, not an official site of the German Foreign Office, but rather a critical watchdog organ, writes in German, "Precisely in the western Ukrainian city of Lvov, a place where many thousands of Jews were murdered under the Nazi occupation, Yushchenko's electoral alliance supported a leading figure of the extreme-right anti-Semitic party UNA-UNSO, Ukrainian National Assembly, Ukrainian National Self-Defense. The UNA-UNSO counts as militantly anti-Russian and advocates a Ukrainian-German-Spanish axis," unquote. "It belongs to the tradition of Ukrainian Nazi collaborators. The Ukrainian Nazi collaborators were members of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, OUNB. The anti-Semitic nationalist bloc, quote, enjoyed the particular protection of the German Abwehr, German military intelligence in World War II. The Congress of Ukrainian Nationalists, or KUN, is considered the contemporary successor organization of the OUNB. It forms part of the electoral alliance of Viktor Yushchenko." So we are basically supporting the same Ukrainian fascists we brought in at the end of World War II. They crop up in the context of the investigation of Kennedy's assassination. So again, the Earth Island, the virtual state, that Ukrainian fascist publication sounds rather like what we were reading in the Hamas charter. Again, folks, you got to think outside of the box here to keep up with the virtual state and the underground Reich. And they are heating it up for Obama. Another suspicious death. Now, bearing in mind what we were talking about in connection with Georgia, one of John McCain's top foreign policy advisors, and again, note that the Mumbai assault was originally scheduled to take place during the U.S. campaign, but of course, part of the Bush-McCain shtick, so to speak, was to maintain that they are strong on national security and were helping to keep down the war on terror, blah de blah de blah. Actually, they did about as much as they possibly could have to precipitate the war on terror. The invasion of Iraq was about the worst thing they could have done. And of course, not McCain, but the Bush administration, bears a significant element of culpability, not only in September 11th, but also in the funding of Islamic terrorism when the Operation Green Quest raids took place on March 20th of 2002. They not only popped the top Al-Qaeda funding apparatus, but the top funding apparatus for Hamas and for Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And who should intercede on behalf of them but Talat Otman, director of Harkin Energy, close associate of both Georges Bush, a guy who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in 2000, and someone who's very close to people who are in a position to make things very uncomfortable for Barack Obama in the Blagojevich investigation. But now bear in mind that one of McCain's top foreign policy advisors during the campaign was the former top lobbyist for the Georgian government. Listen to the following. We talked about a suspicious death inside one. This is really suspicious. Yahoo News carries the following story. It's from December 20th of 2008. It's headlined, "Bush insider who planned to tell all killed in plane crash. Nonprofit demands full federal investigation." It reads in part, "Michael Connell, the Bush IT expert who has been directly implicated in the rigging of George Bush's 2000 and 2004 elections, was killed last night when his single-engine plane crashed 3 miles short of the Akron airport. Velvet Revolution is a nonprofit that has been investigating Mr. Connell's activities for the past 2 years and can now reveal that a person close to Mr. Connell has recently been discussing with a VR investigator how he can tell all about his work for George Bush." Well, he's not going to tell anything right now, is he? Or ever again. Not alive, anyway. "Mr. Connell told a close associate that he was afraid that George Bush and Dick Cheney would, quote, throw him under the bus," unquote. A tipster close to the McCain campaign, repeating again, a tipster close to the McCain campaign disclosed to Velvet Revolution in July that Mr. Connell's life was in jeopardy and that Karl Rove had threatened him and his wife, Heather. VR's attorney Cliff Arnebeck notified the United States Attorney General, Ohio law enforcement, and the federal court about these threats and insisted that Mr. Connell be placed in protective custody. VR also told a close associate of Mr. Connell's not to fly his plane because of another tip that the plane could be sabotaged. Mr. Connell, a very experienced pilot, has had to abandon at least 2 flights in the past 2 months because of suspicious problems with his plane. On December 18, 2008, Mr. Connell flew to a small airport outside of Washington, D.C. to meet some people. It was on his return flight the next day that he crashed. On October 31st, Mr. Connell appeared before a federal judge in Ohio after being subpoenaed in a federal lawsuit investigating the rigging of the 2004 election under the direction of Karl Rove. The judge ordered Mr. Connell to testify under oath at a deposition on November 3rd, the day before the presidential election. Velvet Revolution received confidential information that the White House was extremely concerned about Mr. Connell talking about his illegal work for the White House, and 2 Bush-Cheney 04 attorneys were dispatched to represent him. An associate of Mr. Connell's told Velvet Revolution that Mr. Connell was involved with the destruction of the White House emails and the setting up of the off-grid White House email system. Mr. Connell handled all of John McCain's computer work in the recent presidential campaign. Note that. Mr. Connell handled all of John McCain's computer work in the recent presidential campaign. VR has received direct evidence that the McCain campaign kept abreast of the legal developments against Mr. Connell by reading the VR dedicated website. Wonder what Mr. Connell knew about the shenanigans in Georgia, Well, they are heating it up for Obama. For the record, at 6:54, at 6:55, and 6:56, I talked about badjacketing Obama. And in those programs, I accessed a series of scoop news articles by Evelyn Pringle. For example, the March 29, 2008 article, "Barack Obama, the Wizard of Oz," talks at length about the links between the badjacketing milieu, including Karl Rove, and Governor Blagojevich, who, by the way, I mispronounced that Blagojevich. It's Blagojevich. Now everybody, including yours truly, knows how to pronounce that name because they're heating up for Obama on the domestic front. And who do you suppose appeared on Fox News to turn up the heat a little bit higher? From the Fox News website, Sunday, December 28th of 2008, Jamie Colby, a Fox News guest host, was hosting... This is headlined, "Karl Rove takes on the Bush legacy and the challenges facing President-elect Obama." This will be on the description for the program, but Karl Rove is talking about, it looks like Governor Blagojevich is going to really make things uncomfortable for Barack Obama. That's one of the things I talked about, 6:54, 6:55, 6:56, bad jacketing Obama. They're right on schedule. And bear in mind that the second largest stockholder in News Corp, the parent company of Fox News, behind Gruppenführer Murdoch himself, is Prince Al-Walid of Hamas. He does fundraise. Muslim Brotherhood does fundraisers for Hamas. And of course, things are heating up on the domestic economic front for Obama as well. We've got this bailout, folks, haven't we? It looks like the recession could turn into a depression. San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, November 26th of 2008 has a column by Kathleen Pender talking about just how big the bailout is. This is called Bailout Grows. Total relief package up to $8.5 trillion. Nobody knows risk to taxpayers. Skipping down, that sum, $8.5 trillion, according to Bloomberg News, represents almost 60% of the nation's estimated gross domestic product. How do you like them apples, folks? And not only that, but how do you like these apples, too? I alluded to this in, for the record, 658. In a David Sirota column, there was a reference to this. This is a report commissioned by the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. Not exactly a fringe conspiracy outfit, is it? It is ironically titled Working Paper 666. Listen to the following about the economic quote, crisis, unquote. Three myths about quantities. The financial crisis has been associated with three widely held claims about the nature of the crisis and the associated spillovers to the rest of the economy. The financial press and policymakers have made the following three claims about the nature of the crisis. One, bank lending to non-financial corporations and individuals has declined sharply. Interbank lending is essentially non-existent. And three, commercial paper issuance by non-financial corporations has declined sharply and rates have risen to unprecedented levels. Here we examine these claims using data from the Federal Reserve and Bloomberg. Our argument that all three claims are false is based on data up until October 15th of 2008. And then there's analysis of these. This is a very technical paper, as you might imagine, coming from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, has figures. And basically, it says, skipping down, these figures show that the first claim, that banks have essentially stopped lending to non-bank entities and individuals, is false, at least in the aggregate, as of October 15th. More analysis of figures, and it basically indicates these figures show that while commercial paper issued by financial institutions has declined, commercial paper issued by non-financial institutions is essentially unchanged during the financial crisis. And skipping down again, we have documented that commercial and industrial loans made by banks have risen dramatically during the period of the financial crisis. And it goes on to it. This will, by the way, this excerpt will be in the description for this broadcast. Data that support, skipping down again, data that support this story, especially data that support the signaling view, would be extremely useful. Federal Reserve says, we have seen no data from the current crisis that support this story, especially the signaling view component. So why are we having an $8.5 trillion bailout, roughly 60% of gross domestic product? Yes, indeedy, folks. They're heating it up for Obama. Returning again ever so briefly to the Middle East, bear in mind that Fox News, second largest stockholder in News Corp, is Prince Al-Waleed. Also, by the way, largest stockholder in Citicorp and a person who lobbied along with other Arabs deeply involved in American banking at this point for deep-sixing the Glass-Steagall Act, which protected against some of the excesses that produced the financial crisis. What in bloody hell is going on, folks? Oh, well, one thing that is going on, watch the war drums in the Middle East, as I've said so often, hasn't gone up that much, but Yahoo News has noted the following. Reuters story in New York, oil rises $2 on Israel and weak dollar. So the weak economy and the heating it up in the Middle East has caused a slight rise in the price of oil. We will see. Nobody has any money. What remains to be seen just what the rising temperatures in the Middle East do to the price of oil. But whenever there's war in the Middle East, up goes the price of oil. And as one Arab banker quoted in, one Arab businessman, I should say, quoted in, for the records, 560 and 561 said, it's always good for us, unquote. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 569, Heating It Up for Obama. This has been recorded on January 4th of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.